Todd Stevens and producer Eric Eisenbray are making the festival circuit with their fantastic new film Swan Song, which stars the incomparable Udo Kier. They both are joining us tonight, and I welcome you gentlemen to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I must tell you that this is one of the best queer films I've seen in years. And I am thrilled that we're able to discuss this delightful film with you both tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. I appreciate it.
Certainly. Thank you for making the film. So, Todd, talk about how long you've been kicking around the story of this character based on a man that you knew way back when, and how long it took you to get his story on film.
It's a good question. I made my first film that I made more than 20 years ago, I think, was called Edge of 17. And there was I had a character in Edge of 17, a Mr. Pat character in that film that was meant to be in that film to play the mentor of the lead character who was like based on me. We could never find the right actor to play the part. So what wound up happening is Leah Delaria had a smaller role in the film, and we all the Mr. Pat scenes became Leah's scenes. So she became the mentor to the character. So that was more than 20 years ago, and Leah was amazing, but I was sort of heartbroken to not include Mr. Pat in that film. So ever since then, I've been waiting for the right opportunity, and I think I wrote the script about 5 years ago. And, it was a long process of getting the money. We wound up shooting on a very low budget. And so, it's been in the making, in a way, for more than 20 years.
Nice. So how important was it to you that the film be shot on location in your hometown of Sandusky, Ohio?
I just think when you shoot in a real place, it just, like, gives so much character, you know. And my hometown is a Rust Belt town that's really been down and out in recent years and kind of having its own resurgence. You know, and that was sort of the theme of the film is the lead character is kind of like in a way dead, in a way, like kind of like dead inside, you know, having given up on life. And my hometown kind of helped inspire the story of like rebirth and sort of coming back to life. And so I wanted that my hometown to be like a real character in the film, that is, Mr. Pat came back to life, like so did the town. And it's challenging though, right? I mean, Eric can talk about the challenges that go along with that in terms of housing and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, on one hand, it's great to be able to go to the small town and utilize all of its benefits being in a small town. But the flip side is, you know, you're bringing in crew, you're bringing in some of your actors, you know, and then you have to house them. And, you know, we're really trying to stay on this shoestring budget. But again, the flip side is, I mean, the town, I mean, they just accepted us, you know, so much. The locations they were giving us, a lot of the extras and the smaller parts are from local people. I just love the housing that we had. Everything was just really, you know, the city council was like behind us every step of the way. You know, we have a lot of outdoor shots in town, and they were just, shoot here, do this. You know, we'll block the streets off for you, all the stuff. And so it really, as much as there were challenges, it really weighed out so much more to be in Sandusky.
It did, yeah, it's true. I mean, we didn't have money for hotels for most people, so people, including Udo, you know, were staying in people's bedrooms, you know, that needed bedrooms in their houses, and there was so much kindness and generosity, but, people were just staying, we were all kind of living in the downtown area, so, which was also fun, because, like, after we wrapped, we would go out and have drinks, you know, but it was really, it was a labor of love that the town was involved in, yeah.
Nice. And I think it's such an important part of the audience experience is because it's sort of every town USA.
Right. Exactly.
You know, not location specific in any sort of way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think a lot of people could relate to the town.
Nice, nice. So
it's a nice place to grow up and leave. No, I'm just kidding.
So is the Universal Fruit and Nut a gay bar still open there?
No, sadly it isn't. It's been gone for a long time, but we have a new one now called Crowbar. So there's been several incarnations since then, but there's always been a gay bar in Sandusky, Ohio since 1977, which is kind of amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah. And what's the population there?
25,000.
Ah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Medium size.
Yeah.
It's just a bit larger than the town I live in, Sonoma here. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Eric, talk about when you came on board as producer and what your initial reaction was to the project and reading the script.
Well, a little backstory. You know, Tom and I have been friends for, I don't know, over 15 years. I've worked on his last two films. But I was sort of brought in a little, you know, but probably right before we went to pre-production. Mm. And as, you know, it's as a, I mean, I'm not like a young gay man, but I guess younger than Tom.
Younger than me.
Yeah, yeah.
I really just so much responded to, you know, I recently lost my mother, or back then it was more recent. And so just the connection of this idea of, you know, life short, you know, finding your groove back and searching for, you know, forgiveness in these, you know, these relationships that are sort of broken. And having that opportunity, you know, I mean, he, you know, in a metaphysical, you know, way, he has that opportunity at the end to really have that moment. And that just really meant so much to me. And it was a personal for me to be able to come and be a part of it, to be honest. So, yeah, it just really meant a lot.
Nice. And you produced other films?
Yeah, I've worked and produced Todd's last two films, the gay movie films.
Nice.
Yeah. Todd. It's funny, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Southern California, so not the same as this small town, but in this really odd way, and I mean, we've shared this a lot in our friendship, there is this odd connection in how we grew up, that there's just so many similarities. And when I, you know, first got to that town and started just talking to people, making relationships, it just really connected so much to Sandusky. I mean, it almost felt like I grew up there in a way. You know, just by the end of it, just because it's so, you know, there's just such a lot of love there, you know, for the town and for the people and the history. And I just love Sandusky. I really connected there.
It's also really interesting that it's changed a lot for the better as a gay man, you know, over the last 20 years. When we went there to make Edge of 17, we came up with a fake script, you know, that like removed the gay element from, we like did Change All, you know, Rod to Rhonda kind of thing. And because, you know, we felt that people at that time wouldn't help us. But, you know, fast forward 20 years later, when Eric and I got there to start pre-production, they were in the middle of the third annual Gay Pride Festival. Mm. So my hometown has really transformed a lot in terms of their attitudes toward queer, you know, issues. And that gave me a lot of hope, you know.
Right. Did you have an opportunity to show the film to the people of Sandusky?
Not yet. No. Our production office is located in sort of the movie palace downtown called the State Theater, which not long after we shot there was like hit by a tornado that like collapsed the whole roof and the whole and everything. But so they're rebuilding it. Now we had hoped to have a premiere there, but I just found out that Magnolia, the distributor, actually booked it in the local Cinemark, you know, behind the mall movie multiplex, which is kind of surreal, you know, and cool that
right
that place where I grew up, you know, seeing movies as a kid will like run the film. So that's going to happen like in early August.
Nice. And the entire cast is incredible. And I want to chat about a number of them. But let's begin with the legendary Udo Kier.
Yeah, Udo.
Who?
No. he's amazing. It's funny watching the film now. It's like, I can't imagine anybody else playing. You know what I mean? No. And it really became important to me with all the actors that were playing gay characters to cast like queer actors for the parts, you know, like for this project, I just felt that I wanted people who had really lived it, you know, and really been through. And Udo is, you know, he's lost people to AIDS and he's, we didn't want to act, you know, it's like that was kind of our like motto, no acting, just be real and just be really in the moment. And he's just so, he doesn't rehearse, you know. He wanted to kind of like hang out and spend time in the nursing home by himself, you know, before. And he just really like immerses himself in the reality of it. It's not calculated. It's just like kind of like naturally reacting in the moment. And he and I knew each other for like a year before we shot, because he had helped me with a Kickstarter campaign that helped fund the movie. And so we had become really good friends by the time we shot, which really helped us trust each other, you know? But yeah, I mean, we're like best friends now. We talk like almost every day on the phone.
So. Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah. He's wonderful. I mean, we felt like every day on the set, we were like watching a masterclass in acting. You know?
Yeah. With what? Yeah. Nice. With like 250 film credits under his belt. I mean,
I know, exactly. Yeah. And but he knew that this film, you know, it's been a while since he's been the lead, you know, of a film, and he really seized the opportunity. He knew this was a role of a lifetime. He knew it from day one. And he just wasn't easy. We were shooting in Ohio in the middle of summer. It was 100 degrees and 100% humidity, it seemed like.
Oh, God.
And, you know, walking around in this, like, sweatpants outfit. It was very, very demanding. And shooting in 18 days, and he's in every single frame of the film.
Right.
Smoking cigarettes constantly. It was physically challenging, you know, for a 75-year-old man. But he was just there on the front lines. Let's go. Come on. Let's shoot. You know, and he just had the best attitude. So
he's
dragging us along.
So he was dragging us along. Yeah, exactly.
Really? Really? Yeah.
Yep,
nice. Nice. So talk a bit more about the character that he plays both in the film and the person in real life that you knew.
Yeah. I mean, when I grew up, when I was a little kid, I would go downtown, which is, I lived near downtown, and there was this very flamboyant man that I would like spot on occasion. It would be walking around, you know, with like a pantsuit and a ring on every finger and with like a fedora hat. And you know, this is like in the 70s, you know, like kind of this outrageous, like flamboyant, you know, peacock, you know? And so I was always like, who is that? And when I turned 17, I got up the nerve to go to our local gay bar, which is called the Universal Fruit and Nut Company. And there was Pat, you know, he's one of the first people I saw on the dance floor in a sequined jumpsuit or whatever. And it all kind of came together. I'm like, oh my God, that's that guy, you know, that I saw when I was a kid. And so he was very courageous and very different, you know, like he wasn't just gay. He was like beyond gay. because I always felt different, like I didn't fit in. And here was a guy that was very different and not afraid to show it. And so he kind of became my hero, you know? I never really knew him. So the character that Michael Urie plays is kind of like me, you know, it's like this guy had like a big influence on me, but I never really knew him, you know? So I think that just goes to show how people like from that era, you know, the hairdressers, the florists, the interior designers in small towns, by having the courage just to be themselves, had a much bigger influence than they ever would have realized. and really help to change people's minds, because it's like, you know, it's like, you know, it's when you know somebody who's gay, that maybe you're conservative and you have a certain attitude, but then, you know, it's like, or your brother or your kid or your nephew or whatever, that's, or your hairdresser, and that's what changed minds, you know. So I feel like people like Pat paved the way for gay marriage, paved the way for all the rights we have today. So that's what I was trying to do, is like make an homage to those old school, you know, queens that had the guts, not just in big cities, but in small towns, to be who they were.
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, when the real Mr. Pat was from West Virginia, like a very poor coal mining town.
Wow.
Came to the big city of Sandusky. And so, casting a German actor with a German accent to play him was not my first thought, you know.
Right.
But I love that, you know. I think sometimes it's good to not overthink things, because, like, every other way, Udo was perfect. And, he asked to see a couple pictures of the real Mr. Pat. Pat always held his lighter, like a cigarette. He always had a cigarette, like one of those long brown, you know, cigarettes, and, you know, and had the lighter in his hand and crossed his arm. And, you know, Udo asked to see a couple pictures of the real Pat, and he did meet his niece and friends and stuff like that. But then he just incorporated some little elements of those pictures and stuff, the way Udo held his, held his body and stuff, into the character, which is really cool, you know. So it's not exactly the person, but he like captured the essence of
right. And I think the accent works perfectly, because it sort of brings in the entire, you know, immigration debate, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And my hometown is actually a German, I mean, it was settled by Germans back in the day,
right,
and stuff. So yeah, it just feels really, I like that. I love that he has an
accent. Right. Well, yeah. You know, I love Eric. I mean, probably being in Southern California, you're sort of used to accents, but those of us who are a little older were very used to accents. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, so of course, lots of Germans, lots of Poles, lots of Swedes, you know, and, you know, the grandmothers were there who couldn't speak English, or, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So, Eric, you getting back to casting, you managed to get both Crystal Carrington and Legally Blonde's favorite hairdresser to do parts in this film. Talk about how they came to be part of Swan Song.
Well, Coolidge, that was a hard role to cast. We'd gone through, I mean, I don't even know, a huge list of, you know, fabulous lady actresses to play the role. And we got close to a couple different ones, but just nothing really worked out. And we, the actress that plays Sue, the thrift shop owner, who's been every one of Todd's films, we were about to really move her into the Dee Dee position, just because we couldn't find anybody. And we tried, I think maybe at the beginning of the process, to get Coolidge. We just could not get a hold of her.
Well, we did. That's the thing to add to that is that, like, she was actually my first choice, but, you know, so we just couldn't get any response, basically.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And then, I don't know, somehow she got a new agent or manager or representation of some sort, and we were able to get that contact and get to her, and it was, I mean, it was like a day or two before we started shooting. I mean, it came together.
Wow.
And she was great. She's a doll. She's a really sweet person, really down to earth. Actually had a lot of nerves, you know, I think just because she's used to you know, a certain production, a certain level, whatever, you know, just like she's got her MO and the way that she works. And so I think she was just nervous to come into this, you know, the way that we were working. But obviously, as you can see on camera, you know, she nailed everything and she was great.
She was also a little reluctant to play
a
bad guy.
The heavy, you know? Right.
Like, Yeah, I think that she was fascinated, and that was part of the appeal, but she's always, you know, the person everybody loves. And so to play, it was a bit of a stretch. And I'm proud of that, that, you know, she's very funny in the film, but she's also got a real depth and almost like a little bit of darkness, you know, mm-hmm. or sadness. And so I think it's cool that she showed like a different side of herself.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And she asked a couple of times to have certain words or lines changed because she was afraid that, like, you know, how does she put it? She's like, I've always been cast as the hooker with the heart of gold or something like that. Just right. something like yeah, that, yeah. you know? And she kind of always has been, you know, she's in some regards to that. And, but everyone that, you know, responds to her is like, wow, it's great to see her in a different light. You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And as far as Linda Evans, I think you can probably speak better to that because I think she was already.
She was like an idea, you know, I mean, I've loved Linda forever, but, you know, she was one of my casting director, Eve Battaglia's ideas. And, Linda is retired, you know, she hasn't done a film in like 25 years.
Wow.
So Eve got a hold of her and she got her to read the script and she just really connected to it personally. You know, I had forgotten about the whole Rock Hudson thing from back in the Dynasty
days. Yeah, right, right.
How she, you know, kissed Rock Hudson, like when the episode came out, right when it was like, the news came that Rock Hudson was HIV positive and everybody was like, oh my God, Linda Evans going to get AIDS from Rock Hudson. And she really like stood up and said, you know, educated and was a real defender of his. Honest to God, Linda Evans is like one of the kindest, sweetest, nicest, down to earth people that I've come across in the movie business. Clearly she didn't do it for money. We were like, you know what I mean? And she's got money and she doesn't need to work. But it just really touched her. And she had a lot of guts, you know, she does stuff without any makeup on and the camera like right up in her face. Right? It was really gutsy and she was just really a real joy. And Udo adored her. They really connected. It was just a real honor to have her be in it. She's much smaller than I. She's very petite, you know. And I imagine Crystal is like this, you know.
Giant. Right. Well, you know, it was the big hair and the shoulder pads in Dynasty, exactly. Right? Exactly. Man.
But the air about her is so big. You know?
Right. She's right.
Like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the tension.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. That's great. I mean, it's amazing to see her, you know. I mean, I was thinking back, when was the last time I've seen her in anything? And
I know.
Yeah. She's one of those actresses that just like, you know, hung it up at one point, you know, like Audrey Hepburn or like I'm finished. So Eric, talk about some of the film festivals where Swan Song has been shown and what the response has been.
We had a world premiere at South by Southwest, which was great. The response there, I mean, you know, we got a sales agent and we were able to sell the movie, so the response there was, you know, for us was awesome.
Right.
And then, you know, since then we had our international premiere a couple of weeks ago at, the comedy festival in Monte Carlo. Mm. And we won the audience award, right? Audience award. Mm. And
nice.
We won Best Actor, which was just, is awesome. And
it won the audience award for the New Fest, the New York Gay and Lesbian
Festival. Wow. Nice. Festival.
It won the audience award for that, and it just won a jury award for best film in Torino, Italy, at a, you know, the biggest queer festival, I think, in Europe. It used to be, it's now called the Lovers Film Festival, but it used to be called the Torino Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. It won there too. I mean, it's all a bit weird because it's like most of these things have been virtual.
Right, you know? Right.
We're waiting for that. We're actually going to Dallas tomorrow to a festival called Oak Cliff.
Yeah.
And they're going to show it in like a big old movie theater and Udo is coming. And, you know, that we're kind of looking at that as like our in-person, you know, premiere.
We've got some of our crew coming, another actor.
Oh, nice, nice.
So, wow. Because until you hear it with an audience and sit with an audience and feel how they're reacting to it, it's like, it's not done until then. You know, it's like the circle is complete at that time. So we're very excited about it.
Nice, nice. So, you know, we sort of touched on some of the film's themes and some of the ideas you wanted to get across, Todd. Elaborate a little, if you'd like, on, you know, sort of where we were as a queer community, where we are, maybe where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, Pat's character came from, to me, like what I would call like the greatest gay generation in a way, like the generation that built the community, you know. I have it in the script that, you know, he tells a young bartender, see that stage? My lover built it with his own two hands. I sewed the curtain, you know. So these, you know, and they went through a lot to do that. It wasn't easy, you know. Cut to now, it's like there's a scene when Udo and his best friend are sitting in a park, like watching two gay dads teach their kid how to throw, you know, to play catch. And I personally like films that, like, being gay is not, I call them post-gay films, where, like, or post-coming out, like, where being gay is not the conflict of the story.
Right.
You know? Like, that's not the main conflict. It's almost like for Udo's character, the fact that it's so accepted now is almost a conflict to him. Because I think it's very bittersweet. On one hand, it's lovely to see, you know, a couple of gay dads and their two kids, you know. It's wonderful. On the other hand, that's never going to be him, you know. Like, that's he didn't have that. And obviously, you know, it's too late. So I think in a way there's a little bit of possible, a tinge of jealousy or, you know, resentment a little bit. But on the other hand, he's so happy that that's possible. So I think that's, I was trying to show how far, you know, things have come.
Mm-hmm.
In that time. And in not trying to make, like, being gay like the boogeyman of a story, you know. There's still a place for that. And I think every generation needs its coming out films and stuff, because it's still not easy for a lot of people.
Right.
But if you look at my hometown, you know, as a little barometer, things have come a long way, you know. There's no doubt about it. So,
yeah. There's also the whole aspect of the small town gay bars closing.
Thank you.
That, you know, is in the film, and that's, you know, that's something that's very true that was, you know, happening before COVID, and obviously COVID accelerated that. I mean, I live in Los Angeles, and I mean, there's probably almost 10 gay bars.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, big city gay bars are closing too, right?
It's all of it. You know? And I think COVID's probably just accelerated all that. And it's, and, you know, he's, in the movie he says, you know, we're our safe spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, you know, nowadays, it's like, the, you know, we are so much more integrated into society that people are going to Applebee's or whatever and holding hands. But it's still, you know, maybe someone who grew up in that, it's hard to let it go, because it almost is going to make me cry. It makes me cry every time in the movie when they're at that. And a lot of people have talked about this and felt similar, that when he's dancing with the drag queen and he's like, oh, I missed this. And she's like, dancing. And he says, no, our people, you know? And it's just like that community, you know, that sense of, like, you know, being with your people and having fun and dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know. It makes me cry every time.
It's a way, it's a sort of a culture that's becoming extinct, you know, gay culture in a way is becoming extinct, because we're assimilating into society, because we don't need gay bars, you know, as much, or at least we don't think we do. But I think it's a really interesting question I tried to pose, you know, are these places still needed, you know? But the fact is that Yeah, as it becomes more acceptable to, you know, kiss your boyfriend at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Back in my day, you know, you'd get the shit. Back in my day, you would get beat up, you know.
Yes, or, right. Kicked out, so, right.
Gay bar was the only place you could go to be free.
Yeah.
And to be safe. And that's, in a lot of places, thank God, that's changing. But the loss, so people feel like they don't need gay bars as much, especially the younger generation. And so because of that, and also because of apps and people meeting, you know, on apps and stuff like that, the gay bars, as we said, in both small towns and big cities, are kind of going away. And so is that okay? You know, what does it mean? And in a way, it's great because it shows how far we've come. On the other hand, there's the loss of this community that was like a family, and especially in like Pat's day.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these people were really, they were like family. And and it's not like that in my hometown with the gay scene anymore. Mm. It just isn't.
Yeah.
You know, it just isn't. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's no.
But it even extends to, you know, especially I think in small towns, but even in bigger cities and towns, mm-hmm. and stuff, that cis women, you know, it's a safe space for them to go and dance and have fun.
Right,
you know, my sister
right.
talks about it all the time. She always just like, she's like, I can't even go to a gay bar to dance anymore because they don't exist, you know. So the safe space, you know, that community is, you know, larger than just the LGBTQ
That's true.
Community, you know, right. especially in these small towns where there's mm-hmm. there's nowhere else to go.
Right,
you know,
right.
Walmart might, you know, in Sandusky, it might be suffering, but it's still, you know, it's the bar where everybody goes if they want to go dancing. Mm. It doesn't matter if you're queer or not.
Right. And then, and again, another that touching moment of the dancing, and you think, right, so few, the like, especially the big discos are really gone, you know. I mean, there are smaller clubs that maybe you could dance in, and you know, a 6x6 split space, but you right. know, for even a big city like San Francisco, there is no nightly giant dance club. Chicago is the same way, you know, the area where I grew up, which kind of amazes me. Lots of smaller bars and, you know, stand and model bars, S&M bars, like we used to call them. But yeah, the big dance clubs and right. It was a community and it was our allies. You realize who your allies were, like a giant group of friends, gay and straight, could go to those clubs and have a great time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. Dancing is good for the soul, right?
Yeah. I think, again, I mean, staying on this like dancing thing, you know, a lot of people responded to that in, you know, coming out of COVID and all of us being so isolated and so separate from each other, that a lot of people have commented that scene, mm. you know, really brought a lot of joy to them because it was, you know, it was like, oh, I miss that. I just miss people mm-hmm. and having fun, you know?
Right.
And
so I
think this, you know, unbeknownst to us, you know, I think this film also really speaks to, you know, coming out of COVID, it's opening, you know, why we're coming out of COVID. I think that's really gonna, well, hopefully, you know, people will connect to that.
Yes. I'm sure they will. So, Todd, talk about when the film will open and how many theaters. And
it's going to continue to play some festivals over the course of the next month and stuff. And then on August 6th, it will open theatrically, hopefully in most major cities, you know, art house that have like art house screens that are back, you know, slowly opening back up again, thank God. And then the following week after that, it'll go on to video. It'll continue in theaters, but it'll also become available on video on demand.
Nice. Like,
on iTunes or Amazon.
Oh, great.
On the following week, August, what's the date on it? 13th, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But we really do encourage people to come see it in the theater because yes. that's, you know, that's what we made it for. And,
right.
And
it really is a crowd movie.
Yeah, it's just the crowd. But But yeah, it's coming out on August 6th, so check your local listings.
Absolutely, absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, August, yeah, it's about going to be about 20 markets. Yeah.
Okay, so. great. Yeah, and we need to go out there and support those theaters, large and small at this point, right?
Absolutely.
I think most of them are up to full capacity.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's been great chatting with you guys. I really appreciate it. Best of luck with Swan Song. I think everyone should see it. And come back when you've made another.
Okay, we will. Thanks for having us.
Of course.
Yeah.